Welcome to Inside Out, the Naked Truth, where we explore everyday issues and discover their core truth so that we may understand them and hopefully add a little more fun to our lives.
Tonight's show is coming to you live from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
I am Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And I'm Errol Alicia Strider.
No, you're not.
And together we will explore these truths through a humor, a little bit of silliness, probably. That's just the way it is. Conscious conversation, we hope will be conscious. Poetry, music, skits, and hopefully also your comments.
Tonight's show is brought to you by Go Raw, 100% natural organic raw food that not only tastes good, but is good for you.
Go Raw can be found in Whole Foods and in the organic section of Costco, among other places. Go to goraw.com to find a store near you and find out more about Go Raw products. And let me give you the call-in number right now, because we know you're eager to join in on this conversation. 888-627-6008. And let's give you just a little hint of where we're headed tonight with a little bit of a song here, and here we go. We're in the money.
Well, I guess you know that we're going to be talking about money.
Money and scarcity. They go hand in hand, often as not, or money and abundance. They sometimes go hand in hand, too.
Well, money, you know, it's metal and paper and plastic and electronic figures. But in capitalistic countries, all of it is worshipped as a god. We spend hours creating ways to have that God bestow us with plenty. We extract power and prestige, or we believe, from genuflecting before that God. More always seems part of the money God. No matter how much we have, we always want more.
More.
Money is our God, and we are addicted to it. We cannot really live without it. Without it, we crave, we steal, beg, borrow to have it. We believe it will give us happiness, peace, security, and sometimes it does, for a time. We receive it, we use it to provide us with comfort, food, shelter, and then we derive status from it. Our comfort requires a better bed, a better car, a better anything, everything. Once we taste its pleasures, we cannot stop. We create a society built in obsolescence. We can no longer have a car for 20 years or pay off a mortgage, send our children to public schools. No, money says we buy starter homes as an investment, rent cars, turn them in every 4 years, enroll our children in private schools because we want them to get the kind of education that will enable them to earn a lot of money. Once we enter the community where money reigns supreme and we feel the deliciousness of its lure, we are hooked. Unless we realize money is not the end, but merely the means. It is not a deity, but an exchange. We can use money for what we need, but sometimes what we need, if we truly need it, it may come to us without that monetary exchange. Perhaps it will come to us with the exchange of what we are good at in exchange for what we need. We can educate our children to ask questions, the questions that will open their minds and expand their creativity so that they may enhance the world we live in, answer the questions that loom before us about climate changes, polarity, feeding gigantic populations, etc. Instead of being stuck on the treadmill of having to make money to get whatever, perhaps we can focus on what we truly want and allow the mystery to guide us to its source and be open to receiving. Money may be used in that exchange or not.
Very nice, Rochelle. It reminds me, I had this this idea that there's like two stages of evolution, that one we're coming out of and one we're moving into. And the previous stage of evolution can be defined as, in two words, not enough. And the current stage of evolution, the two words I would use are enough already.
I know, in this stage of evolution, I can't even believe that we're saying enough already. We're still in the I want more, I want more, I want more. You know, because when you're 2 years old, I mean, remember when our children were two and we would bounce them up and down or play a game with them? We stop at some point because we got tired, maybe. And what was the first thing they said?
More.
That's right. More, I remember. More, more and more.
I was playing with a little two-year-old on the beach years ago, remember? And I kept falling down. More, more. I don't know. I must have fallen down so many times. 12 times, I think I was still going when it was like, enough already.
Right. So when, you know, you realize that society, in terms of evolution, is somewhere around 2 years old, you know, then you want more of everything all the time.
Society on a mature day.
On a mature day. Forever.
We are really at the very early stages of evolution, in spite of all our technical prowess and apparent awareness. But back to the subject of money, I think it would be good to look at it from a different angle. As you know, if you listened to our program before, we like to use sketches and comedy and characters as a way to explore some of these issues. So tonight we're going to do a sketch called Money Talks. And Rochelle plays the character of money. And I play, as I like to describe it, because it's kind of typecasting, some poor schlep.
No, you are not a schlep.
Well, the character. The
poor
character.
Maybe, but not a schlep.
Who comes in to talk to money to see what, in fact, money might offer. And to get us into that, here we go. Hello, is this Maura Money Limited? Are you Ms. Money?
Yes, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Well, I'm so glad to be here. I've been hoping to see you for quite some time. And, you know, what can I tell you? Maura. Maura, that's your name, Maura? Maura Money?
Yes. We're having some technical difficulties. Can you come back in just 1 second? We're beginning again with the piece, Money Talks.
Is this More Money Limited? Am I in the right place?
Oh, yes. So welcome. It's good to have you here.
Are you Ms. Money?
Oh, yes. But you can call me Maura.
Maura. Uh-huh.
Tell Maura. Me your name again.
Henry. Henry Simpson.
Have a seat, Harry.
Henry?
Of course. I've been expecting you. I knew sooner or later you'd come to see me. Most everybody does.
Well, the entire human race loves you. That must make you feel pretty special.
It's nice to be wanted.
An understatement, I'd say.
Oh, why don't we get right down to it? Perhaps you could begin by telling me what it is you really want.
I guess the first thing is more security.
Oh, I'd say security is first on most people's list, and I do excel in that area.
What exactly do you provide, then?
I can give you a 75% guarantee that in the future you will have 50% security up to 25% of your life.
I thought you could provide 100% security.
Oh, I'm afraid nothing can guarantee against every inevitability, Horace.
Henry.
Life does have its surprises, but I can still provide more than adequate security if you are willing to make the necessary sacrifice.
Sacrifice? What sacrifice?
The present, of course.
The present?
Obviously, you can't expect to live in the present and for the future, too, can you?
Well, I always thought I could have both.
Being in the present and having future security. Oh, no, my dear Harold.
Henry.
The two are mutually exclusive, but I can offer you a wonderful compensation for your sacrifice.
Yeah? What's that?
Pleasure.
Pleasure, of course. That's one of the main reasons I'm here, isn't it?
Of course it is. And I want to assure you that I can make an 85% guarantee that you will have pleasure anywhere from 5 to 15% of your life.
5 to 15%? That's all?
Well, you will have to commit approximately 33% of your life to work. Then if you subtract 33% for sleep, that leaves roughly 33% for your leftover life. If you deduct about half of that for dealing with the necessities, that will leave roughly 15% of your time for pleasure, minus 5 or 10% for unexpected demands, and, of course, having to wait in lines. Still, it's a very good deal, wouldn't you say?
Well, as long as it makes me happy.
Oh, I'm afraid I don't offer people happiness, Howard. I offer
Henry.
Pleasure.
But I thought happiness is what people strive for.
Oh. Whatever gave you that idea? People don't strive for happiness. If they wanted that, they'd be getting it. No, you don't see very many happy people running around now, do you?
No, I guess
oh,
I don't.
Oh, don't look so despondent, Arnold.
Henry.
Because I do offer additional benefits.
You do?
Oh, yes. For one thing, I can offer you prestige.
Prestige, of course. The feeling that I'm important, that my life is worthwhile and meaningful.
Close. Now, I can't exactly offer you meaning or real self-worth, but I can offer you a way in which you can have the illusion of self-worth.
The illusion? I want the real thing, not an illusion.
Don't get testy, Earl. Come now, an illusion of self-worth is better than no self-worth at all, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I guess that's true.
And do you know what other fantastic thing I have to offer you?
What?
Power, my dear. Power.
Power? Like real power?
Better than that. The appearance of power. And appearance is everything, as you know. Everything.
Yeah, that's great.
So, there you have it. Security, a pleasure, prestige, and a power. Oh, and I almost forgot. Things, lots and lots and lots of things. Quite impressive, don't you think?
Yeah, but what about freedom?
Freedom? Oh, you must mean mobility. Of course I offer that.
Mobility?
Ah, yes. The ability to go where you want, to when you can get away from your obligations. And the more you sacrifice, the more you can get away.
More sacrifice?
Mm-hmm.
What about the freedom?
Oh, freedom is not caring whether you get there or not.
Oh, I see. But, well, I just...
Oh, relax, Ernie. Yeah, life Henry. Won't last for long. You'll be dead soon enough, so don't worry.
Dead? Do you offer anything to take care of dead?
Dead? Oh, yes. I can offer you the fantasy that if you are important and powerful enough, you can even escape dead. Not bad, huh?
I see. It's not really permanent security coverage, then.
Oh, come now. Whatever your name is, don't tell me. Don't tell me. You can't really expect me to cover you after death. Frankly, at that point, you are out of my hands. Anyway, the meter's running, and I'd like you to be able to take advantage of me as soon as possible.
Well, me too.
But first, there is this little agreement.
Agreement?
Oh, yes. People must agree to my terms if I'm going to provide them with quality service.
Your terms? What about my terms?
Whose terms?
Mine.
Oh, that is so sweet, my dear boy. But you don't have any terms. I dictate all the terms. Please, read it.
But it's all small print.
Well, I don't want to confuse you.
Oh, of course. Okay, let's see. I agree that Mora Money Limited is not responsible for providing the following things: a joy in my work, love of neighbors, service to humankind, living in the present, meaningful existence, true self-worth, survival after death, freedom, or happiness. Huh. Oh. Okay. In return, Money Limited will provide me with 50% security BD. What's BD stand for?
Before death.
Uh-huh, of course. 15% pleasure BD, 25% self-esteem limited to when I'm in a position to acquire more assets, 60% power diminishing to 5% BD and 8% mobility BOA or BD, whichever comes first. Well, what's the BOA?
Before old age. You do understand I can't very well offer people power or mobility when they're old, senile, and decrepit. Now, can I?
I guess not.
Good, then. That's all there is to it. You may sign it now.
Gee, it's really a good deal, but I'd sure like to see if I could get the freedom and the happiness, well, a little more security. You wouldn't mind if I investigated some other options, would you?
Oh, investigate, by all means. Go and investigate. But you'll be back, I'm sure.
But you are, huh? But don't most other people check out other options?
Not that many, actually. You'd be surprised.
But you said it's an illusion, all of that. That's what you said yourself.
I know, but everyone agrees to these illusions. That's what makes them so effective, almost lifelike.
Lifelike?
Yes. And I can fill you up where it counts. doesn't that feel good?
Oh, yes, it does.
Of course it does. And remember, I have numbers on my side. Henry Simpson, did I get it right? Yes, and numbers, lots and lots of numbers that would really count. Wouldn't you agree?
Money makes a world go round. The clinking, clanking sound of money, 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 money. Get a little, money, 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 money. Maka and a buck or a pound. The clinking, clanking, clanking sound is all that makes the world go round. It makes the world go round.
I always say that if money makes the world go round, no wonder we're all so dizzy.
Or so square. Never mind.
That was not the best line to come after my line. What? Who was saying that money, the first money before?
Abba.
Abba.
Yeah.
And the second one was Money Makes the World Go Round, was from, what was it?
Yes.
Cabaret.
Cabaret with Joel Grey.
Right, right.
And probably Liza Minnelli, but I'm not sure.
Well, if it's the movie, it was Liza Minnelli, that's for sure.
So there you have it, the examination of the illusion of what it really has to offer.
I think it's an illusion because it doesn't last. Like everything that is finite is an illusion. And we want money to make us feel that we're immortal. You know, if we have money and you leave it to your children and your grandchildren, and they could become all sorts of horrible people, that's immaterial. But the thing is that the fact that you can will it to somebody or something makes it feel like it's going to go on forever. You know, so it has this feeling of immortality attached to it, rather than a means to an end, which is like, so you can pay for what is that thing that Walt Disney, he's cryogenics, you know, his money has him, you know, he's frozen right now.
Right. Uh-huh. Like a popsicle, huh?
Well, maybe. But the thing is, that's where money has brought him. Instead of being under the earth or lots of ashes, you know, he's frozen.
So I want to approach it from another angle, and that's the belief in scarcity. And I found this passage from the book Keys of Yeshua. And this was a book written by Glenda Green, and the persona of Yeshua, normally called Jesus, has this to say about money, our scarcity. Probably won't find this in the Bible version, but I think it's very provocative. This is what he says. The supply of each day is sufficient for its needs. The only reason the person has needs exceeding his supply is that he has practiced the belief in scarcity until it has become a manifested reality. Scarcity is an interesting but highly artificial contrivance of the mind. Consider this. When there is more than you can ever touch, see, feel, hear, or do, why would you ever believe in scarcity of your own accord? Scarcity is the most implausible conclusion that could ever be drawn from any body of evidence. The allure of scarcity is that it seems to provide an extra certainty of prediction, manipulation, and control over others. But the inevitable betrayal of such belief is that it will rob you of true abundance. Even if a person becomes materially wealthy and focuses on what he lacks, his heart will be set on fear of losing instead of joy in having. Belief in scarcity is strategically useful in artificial economies because it produces strong motivation to engage in competition, political war, and enforced dominance. There is no basis for this in natural order. All beliefs in scarcity are rooted in man's perception of what he can control and produce for himself. Scarcity defines life through man's own instruments of production and limits abundance to, quote, his means can control or event.
I don't know how I feel about that. Because there are so many places in the world, and we are experiencing some of that right here in California, where there is truly a lack of something at some given moment in time, like water. You know, like you go out into the deserts of the Serengeti.
Northern California.
Well, yeah, Northern California, but, you know, where Bangladesh, you know, and you realize that people are starving, that the scarcity to them at that moment is real. The fact that there's a whole earth, you know, that has a lot here and less here, and were we to share it, it probably wouldn't be so scarce, but we don't. But to the person who's starving, to the person who doesn't have water, to the person who is without, those words would have very little appeal. I mean, I believe, you know, they seem intellectually promising and disheartening and inspiring. But I think that when we deal with human beings, I think it's very important to realize that until the needs, the actual physical needs are met in a person, I don't think a person can begin to ponder intellectual assumptions about scarcity. You know, it's like, where's their next meal coming from? It feels scarce, the fact that they can't eat, that a child with a distended stomach because it has no food is starving. There's a scarcity of food for that child. So, you know, like, it may be an illusion, but until we're mature enough to understand that, to really, really grok that, and to know that we can come to a place where we can put our hands out to our neighbors, and it's like, if I, you know, that there was once a wonderful little story about where people were feeding each other.
Right.
The
story goes, the guy goes to heaven, and they take him to this first room, and in the room there's this feast, food, everywhere. But the people are really distraught and upset and malnourished. And when he looks closely at them, he realizes they all have like splints on their arms. So their arms are all forced to, they can't bend at the elbows. And of course they can't eat. Then they take them to the next room, and it's a similar view. The room is full of goodies and eats, and people are laughing and joyful, and they also have splints on their arms. But guess what? They're feeding each other.
Yes. And I think that's the place we can go, you know, when we start to mature as a race of human beings, when we realize that we can feed each other, you know, and then I think the awareness of scarcity can become lessened. But at the point where we are greedy and self-absorbed, and we don't think of anybody else as being part of the world in which we live, then I think scarcity to most people is a reality.
You know, it is a reality, but I think part of what we're doing here on this show is to question the assumptions upon which we build our reality. And I couldn't agree with you more, especially living here in California, that that, you know, it is a reality that we are facing scarcity.
I looked in the paper the other day, and it said that when it starts to warm up on the East Coast, you know, because they've had all this freezing thing, they're going to have floods. So that's an abundance of water. Here in California, we're experiencing drought. So there's this talk about polarities. You know, here we are on the west side of the country, and they're on the east side of the country, and we can't somehow bring it all together, and each of us have what we need. At least not right now. It's not very possible.
Well, I think this comment, though, about that it's manipulated for being control, one could argue that the reason there is this poverty, I mean, we can't control the rains, but the reason, let's say, there is poverty and some people have and some people don't have, clearly comes from the counter activity of scarcity, which is greed, and to the degree to which our identity and our value and worth are defined by how much we have and how much we can gain. So you could argue, yes, scarcity is real if someone, you know, can't put food on the table. On the other hand, we have the capacity to change all that. Would we be able to reorient ourselves toward the actual abundance that is the universe? And I suspect that if we begin to build on those foundations, and we need to in order to, well, survive as a species, that's something we can get going pretty much any time, but we have to start somewhere. So those who do have enough food on their plate and who aren't really in a position of being stressed, like, for example, here where we live in Los Gatos, California, I don't see too much of that. That doesn't mean it's not existent. But we have the capacity to make a change, but then we have to become dissatisfied enough with who we think we are to make those changes.
Yeah, I would say that's true. And an interesting thing happened to me today. I walked out of the bank, and I was heading towards my car, and I walked out of the bank to get some papers that I didn't have. And I looked down in the ground, and there was a quarter. And then a few feet away from that quarter, there was another quarter. And I thought, wow, I just found 50 cents. That's pretty neat. And then I went someplace, and there was a man asking for money for the shelter, and I for a battered women's shelter. And I didn't have money with me except for the 50 cents that I found. So I gave it to the man. I thought, oh, I was obviously given this money so I could give it to him for the shelter. And when I was thinking about it later, I thought, how interesting, you know, like, I could have hoarded it. I could have kept it for myself. You know, 50 cents is not a lot of money, but, you know, I found it and it was my treasure. And the fact, and then when I gave it to this, put it in this box, you know, there was something came over me that felt that it was so real, you know, that almost that I found the money for him.
In order to give it to him.
Right, not for me.
Well, there's a level of mystery that we have begun experimenting with in our life, where you're willing to let go of control and turn things over to kind of a higher movement or of reality, because we operate on the assumption that evolution is working out toward our benefit, that there is a spiritual foundation from out of which we have emerged and entered into this world of experience. And we are challenged, having been given this opportunity as little, I like to call us conscious dirt particles. Rochelle thinks that's a little debasing.
I do. I think it's debasing. I think it's amazing that we are this these molecules that can think and create and understand what a molecule is. You know, that we have self-awareness, that we can learn from mistakes. I mean, I find our place in evolution is amazing to me. It's constantly amazing. And yes, we mess up and we do terrible things as well, but the fact that we can do wonderful things is amazing and should constantly be applauded as far as I'm concerned. You know, I was thinking about money and scarcity, and Errol and I have lived a very interesting life in the sense that we've had famine in our lives and we've had feast, in the sense we've made lots of money at some points and then we've made no money, and it seems that we seem to be doing the same thing all the time when we don't have money and when we do have money. It seems to be the same thing. I mean, there are certain things that happen that are different, you know, we could probably learn from them. But anyway, during one of our famine periods, I was wanting a Christmas tree. It was Christmas time, and I realized that, you know, what the little money we did have, I bought presents for the children and us and friends. And I thought, oh, gosh, it would be nice to have a Christmas tree. And I looked at the little Christmas tree. It was $20, and I thought, well, it would be nice to have that Christmas tree, but I don't have $20. And I turned around, and it was snowing, and in the snow, there was literally a $20 bill. And I bent down and looked around to see if anybody was, you know, pulling out their pockets or, you know, because money by itself doesn't have a name on it, so you really don't know who to call up and say, did you lose $20? And nobody seemed to be at a loss. I took the $20, and I bought our family a Christmas tree, and I thought, these gifts that come from the universe sometimes, you know, that am I special that I receive them, or is it possible to receive them anytime you need them if you know how to truly be open to receiving them? This is a question I ponder.
Well, that is the question, being open to receive it. And part of our challenge is, in order to be receptive, you have to let go of control. And fear drives our motivation to control things so that we feel safe. So we actually cut ourselves off from being able to receive to the degree that we are trying to control in order to get. But we don't receive, and we may or may not get, and what we have is control, and so we've created ourselves as kind of like a spasm. That makes sense?
Well, I don't know if is a spasm. Are you in a state of spasm? You know, I. If we're talking about money and we're talking about scarcity, I think it's very interesting that we, when we don't have money, and we're in a state of scarcity, lots of times we think that's the way it is, that our, we're always going to be that way, and you see so many. I've read so many reports of children growing up in the same families, you know, and some of them just stay in that abject poverty. They just stay in that mindset that they're poor, they'll never get anything, they'll never do anything, they'll never amount to anything. And then one child in that family, or two even, or three out of 12 or maybe more, goes, you know, I can be different. I don't have to follow this. I don't have to continue this order that I was born into. I don't have to continue it. I can stop and can be me. And in the being of me, I can create whatever I want to create. And they do. And you think of how many very famous people have walked out of impoverished backgrounds and made lots of money by doing that which is endemic to them. It's their talent, their beauty, their gifts, their intelligence. So 'tis a mystery if you want to know what I think, Mr. Strider. I think it's a mystery. I think that we've just we scratch the surface ever so little. You know, we create these things that help us navigate the troubled waters of life. You know, we create money as an exchange. We create other things, and we say, oh, now this is important, and we have to do something about this. And I have no idea what it'll be like in 100 years from now. Will we continue this? Will because the things we can't control, like climate and droughts and freezings and things like that, start to erode our concepts of what money means? I don't know.
Well,
I won't be here in 100
we
years.
Won't, that's something we pretty well know. Why don't we ponder that? Let me just throw this little concept into the mix. Then we're going to take a little break and play a song that, idealistic as it may sound, pretty much sums up what the possibilities are. But before we go to that, this is my thought about money. I may have shared this. Money offers the promise of value that can be measured.
Money offers the promise.
Yeah.
Of value that can be measured. Huh.
God offers the promise of that which has immeasurable value. And should I do that again?
You'd have to do it again because I have half a mind to hear it.
Oh, let's try and work on the other half.
Go to the other half. Go to my left brain.
God, money offers the promise of value that can be measured. God, or the full beingness of universe reality, as one definition of the undefinable, offers a different promise, offers the promise of that which has immeasurable value. If only we really cared to find that out.
Stars and satellites, I never dreamed that you'd be mine. But here we are, we're here tonight, singing amen. I'm alive, I'm alive, singing amen. I'm alive. If everyone cared and nobody cried, if everyone loved and nobody lied, if everyone shared and swallowed the pride, we see the day nobody died, and I'm singing it. Amen, amen, I'm alive. Amen, 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 I'm alive. And in the air, the fireflies are only light in paradise.
said and nobody cried. Everyone loved and nobody lied. Everyone shared, swallowed the pride. We see the day when nobody died. If everyone cared and nobody cried. If everyone loved and nobody lied. If everyone shared and swallowed the pride. We see the day when nobody died. When nobody died. You and me, imagine what this world could be. If everyone cared and nobody cried. If everyone loved and nobody lied. If everyone shared and swallowed the pride. We'd see the day when nobody died. If everyone cared and nobody cried. If everyone loved and nobody lied. If everyone shared and swallowed the pride. We'd see the day when nobody died.
That was the bluegrass tribute to Nickelback's All the Right Reasons. And so we want to remind you that we are Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Los Gatos, California. Our sponsor, for which we're very grateful, is Go Raw Foods. Go Raw can be found in Whole Foods and in the organic section of Costco, among other places, or just go to goraw.com to find out about all that wonderful healthy munchies that they provide.
And they're good. They're really tasty. Very
and
tasty.
You can also go to our website and see some more of what we have to offer, which is thelaughingheart.org. As a matter of fact, if you'd like to see the sketch we did, Money Talks, we have a video of that, which you can see on our website, and I think you might enjoy seeing it from a video of a live presentation.
Yeah. And if you want to say anything about what we're talking about, good, bad, or indifferent, call us at 888-627-6008. You know, I'm very interested in when you talk about scarcity, you know, as an illusion. I think that if scarcity is an illusion, so is plenty, because it's the opposite. And you can't have one without the other. And at the same time, when I think about having one's needs met, one's needs, you know, the, to really attract what you need in life, at least our practice seems to be very much involved in that. We had this incident in our life. I don't know if I shared it with you on this program, but it was really an amazing example of getting your needs met, and I think might have shared it a while back, but it's worth sharing again. Errol got this job with a Career Track. Wasn't it the name of the company?
Career Track.
And he needed to be flying around and all over the country, and we had one car, and obviously we would have needed two because we had two children in school, and he had to get to the airport and back at strange hours. And there'd be nobody to pick him up and no buses to take at the hours that he needed. And we both decided we needed a second car, and we didn't really have very much money at that time, and he was just starting this job. And so we decided that, you know, we were talking about it, and we said, well, we need it. You know, we need a second car, and if we need it, we're going to trust that we can have it. And he went for a walk, and he walked out of the house, and the phone rang, and a friend of ours said, who was dating this rather lovely lady, who, and he said that the lady had just gifted him with a brand new car, and he would like to sell us his old car for $1 just to make it a real sale. And I said, okay, I'll give you a dollar for your old car. And when Errol came back, I said, well, if our needs are real and the universe sanctions them, and how long do you think it should take to get what you need? And he looked at me with this baffled look on his face, and I said, how about 5 minutes? Because we just got a second car. And it was a real old gas guzzler, but it took him to the airport and it got him home for the time that he worked for that company. And I always think of it for myself as an example. Not everyone's life works like this, but for us, for our work, what our work is, and sometimes I call myself many things, but I guess I'm a spiritual philosopher more than anything else, to take spiritual principles and see how we can live them. And so these are our principles, and we live it, and there are examples of it every day of my life, you know, like finding 2 quarters today to give to the shelter. It's just kind of things like that happen a lot, and they make me very humble in the sense that I feel like, though I walk through life paying attention to what is available for me, I don't have to work so hard to control every moment of it. I can allow myself to absorb it, and in the absorbing of it, I find the plenty. We don't know the plenty is there if we have scarce consciousness, if we think there's nothing there. But if we look and we're open to receive, something is there that we may not have seen before.
That reminds me of a couple of things. One, I was walking through the trails here at Lupin, where we live, where the clothing optional environment exists. But actually, most of the environment is nature. There's 110 acres here, of which wooded areas with wonderful trails. And I was, I call it wogging, which is kind of going jogging and walking at the same time. One foot actually jogs and the other foot walks.
It's such a funny image. You would look like a total imbecile.
I've been told that. Anyway, so, and like most people, I guess, you can get preoccupied with issues and things that are going on in your life, and periodically I have to do my equivalent of slapping myself in the face as I look around in this nature and these woods and these madrone trees and these oaks and the redwoods and this beautiful trail, and I have to, and such abundance of so much greenery and vitality and life, and I think that's part of what getting still or meditating, or stopping, being here in the now, and allow what wants to show up to emerge out of this now, rather than being caught in this pendulum, I want to say pendulum, past future pendulum, or continuum, and see what emerges. And the other story was, when our kids were little, we were living in Colorado, one day we took them for a ride up in the mountains, and our older son was getting to the point where riding with mom and dad in the mountains wasn't so much fun anymore. But he was still available to the following. I said to him, well, let's look for some visual treasures. I bet we'll find some visual treasures. So let's look out. Cheesy that may sound. Anyway, so we're driving around, and I just had this feeling. I said, when we come around this curve, you'll see a visual treasure right out the window. Be sure and look. This really happened. As we went around this curve, we looked out the window, and right on the side of the road was a deer looking right at us. Mm-hmm. And my knees started knocking, and because it was like, oh my goodness, that was such a thrilling moment. Speaking of deer, when people come to Lupin, I think one of the things that they're most struck by is the cordialness of the deer. They are just everywhere and walking by us and kind of wave and say hello and look at each other. But there's so many deer here, and we like to see a lot of deer here because that means that the mountain lions are at bay.
Well, they're not eating them, that's
for
sure.
We're not eating the ones we don't
see. The mountain lions think that there's no scarcity with all these deer.
I guess.
So the question, I'm going to ask this question. The question for me is there, does scarcity exist in an abundant world, when we don't have any access to that abundance? And how do we have access to it if we believe we can't get it. I mean, it's like a catch-22.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. And I think, and we're going to deal with that in one of our shows, is, and we've touched on a little bit, is the relationship between belief and scarcity. Belief is critical to how we end up experiencing our lives. And most of our beliefs are unconscious and unexamined and messy and blah, blah, blah. But so we're gonna come back and deal with that. Incidentally, speaking of one of our shows, just to let you know, our next show, which we're going to call The Intimates, because we're going to do a sketch called The Intimates, featuring two of our favorite characters, Lord and Lady Umbridge. But the subject of next show is body parts. Yes, we're going to take a little closer look at body parts, because we spend a lot of time dealing with body parts in one way or another, and we just thought it would be kind of...
And for the most part, there's no scarcity of them.
No, we have a lot of body parts. We got inner body parts and the outer body parts.
That's right.
And sometimes I'm reminded, there is so much activity going on inside just my body.
Yeah, even while you're sleeping.
It is busy in there. Busy, 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 all kinds of things. And what we can do to help those body parts maybe take better care of themselves, one of the things would be to, you know, take advantage of Go Raw and some of this really healthy foods. There. So next week, please join us. Again, this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, and we're talking about scarcity and money.
Actually, yeah.
And how they work together and where you are on that and how you're doing and to what degree do we need to change our beliefs about it? What is the foundation for our beliefs, our assumptions? And what we're suggesting here in terms of who we are and what we stand for, and if we're promulgating anything, is that there is a reality that we can live into and abide in that is so supportive that it really makes the issue of scarcity a moot point, to the degree that we can orient ourselves to that fundamental reality, which people call spiritual, you can call it the essence of existence, pure being. But we have to be willing to stop the machinations of our mind and the games we're playing out, and at least begin to question the illusions of what we're dealing with here. So I hope you will continue to join us as we explore these challenging subjects, because...
Or call in or go to our email at estrider@gmail.com and say some of the things that you would like to hear us talk about, and or call in and have a conversation with us so we can find a higher... I don't like to use higher and lower, but... to enter into another perception of our lives. I mean, because we live our lives on a very material plane, and there is another plane in which we can live our lives that doesn't take away from the material but adds to it.
Well, I think there, it's a question of not higher and lower. I agree with you. It's a question of expansive and deepening.
Like you used two words once that I love, generative and degenerative.
Right.
That was generative, which is to grow, and degenerative, which is to get smaller.
You know, just to kind of set off the mood here before we take you, I'm just going to play a little bit of this song sung by Queen Latifah and Dolly Parton called Not Enough.
Stop all this blindness. one God is.
The not enough is, love in our hearts.
The truth is, there is no scarcity when it comes to love. That's something that is absolutely eternal, and it just, there's just always more of it.
There does seem to be that, always more, if we're open to it and if we make ourselves available. And that's why we're doing this program, so that we can make ourselves available to you to help us reorient ourselves toward a more abundant, more fundamental reality out of which life has emerged and will continue to emerge. Well, our great teacher has said, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So there's life in this amazing phenomenon that is fundamental existence, the ground of being, is one of the definitions that Paul Tillich used to describe God. Well, we got 2 minutes, probably a little less than that. I'm Errol Strider.
And I'm Rochelle Alicia Strider.
And this is Insight Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live from Lupin Lodge, where
clothing is optional, but the truth is always naked.
So come join us again next time, next week, where the subject will be body parts. Ooh, and you got some of those. I bet you got some questions about some of those parts. There are parts we like and we're proud of, and there's probably some parts that we're not so happy. And, of course, some of us have lost quite a lot of body parts over the time being. Teeth, limbs, appendices.
6 inches of my colon is gone.
I had some tonsils at one point, I recall. haven't seen or felt those in many years. But whatever it is that you want to explore, again, please join us. And we're going to say goodnight now. And hopefully we'll be with this again next week. Errol Strider.
And Rochelle Alicia Strider.
Signing off.